Heyo, welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go my SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Mike, good to talk to you. Good to be back. I kind of feel a little bit more refreshed now that we've had a week to get done with the magazine, get rested up a little bit. Always excited to be talking some ball with you. I think I saw a graphic yesterday that said we kind of officially like crossed over like the halfway point of the off season. So like the draft was kind of like my tent pole. It's really we crossed over it in the last couple of days. So that's some good news, right?
It is. I was just curious, Stephen, did you have any, nightmares waking up in a pool of sweat, just like, oh, no, I forgot this. I forget about that. You know, once you sent that bad boy off to the printers?
Every day. Every day. I have to, I come up with, there'll be something you'll think about, like a team, and you're like, oh, shoot, did I make sure I take 100% of that into account? There was, a mix-up in names I had earlier on a sheet. But it was just a notes thing, and I had to go oh shoot, did that make it into the magazine? And so yeah, Mike, there's always stuff. It's like I'm always thinking now. It's like, did I think about this enough? Did I think about the Oregon State defensive line enough? So I'll think about it every day. And to piggyback on something that we've talked about a lot, I really think that we know less about these teams now than we did. Like if you go back 10 years ago when the transfer portal was just like 100 players throughout the year. I think we know less about these teams. So I do think our opinions are going to evolve quite a bit over the next couple of months, because we'll get some more data. We'll talk to some more people. We'll kind of see maybe how some of these position battles are looking. So not set in the predictions, but I feel good about where we're going.
Right. And so let's just go where, unfortunately, I mean, it's, it sounds like tragedy was averted, but for anybody that doesn't know, Missouri's All-American running back, Ahmad Hardy, was reportedly shot over the weekend. And he had surgery, and I believe he's in stable condition. Missouri has confirmed all this, so this is not like rumors or speculation or anything like that. And apparently it's an ongoing investigation, so I don't even know if they have caught the perpetrators that shot Ahmad Hardy, but he was at a concert. And that is ongoing. So, again, maybe it's kind of, I don't know, what's the word, Stephen, crass to sit here and say, will he be back on the field? But that's what everybody, that's like the million-dollar question. Thankfully, he is, to our knowledge, he's going to make a full recovery. But I don't know if he's going to be available this season. So, hopefully he is. But obviously, you can't rush back from, a gunshot wound and that allegedly hit him in the leg. So, man, just a tough deal here for Hardy and Missouri, potentially.
It really is. And anytime, when these stories pop up throughout the offseason, my first thought is, I was glad to hear that Ahmad Hardy is okay for the most part, that we know not a lot of details so far, but that, my next hope is that he gets out there and just flat out dominates this season, because we saw it, he was such a fun player to watch, that low center of gravity, breaking tackles, all that. He's such a fun player to watch. So I'm just hoping that I'm glad that Ahmad Hardy, the person, is okay. I'm hoping Ahmad Hardy, the running back, is back to 100% and is out there dominating SEC defenses this year. I know it's tough to think about impact for the season already, but I do think, Jamal Roberts is back, obviously, from Missouri. Austin Simmons is pretty promising. There's a lot of potential for this offense still. So Hardy's status is definitely going to be a major part of when we get later this summer, what it could mean for Missouri in this upcoming season, because they need him if they're going to make a playoff run, and certainly hope that everything continues to go well for him in his recovery and he's back out there by the season opener.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, Stephen, again, I mean, it's, hey, we're a football show, so I can't diagnose gunshot wounds and such things, and I hopefully he's back by 100% by September 3rd, but I don't think we're going to need him against peanut butter, but quite frankly I don't think we're going to need him against Kansas, based on what I know about Kansas and that sorry ass program, Troy, and perhaps even Mississippi State. So again, silver lining here perhaps for Missouri is the schedule is much more difficult, I think, than it has been in years prior. it is that way for everybody now with the 9-game SEC conference slate. But for Missouri, the first month I think is manageable even without your best player, because like you said, they've got one heck of a run backup, and now he's the starter for today until further notice, Jamal Roberts. You know, he could be the breakout star of the Southeastern Conference if he has to shoulder the load the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that schedule gives them a chance. It's going to speculate. We can have, look at the schedule and just see, like, if Ahmad Hardy was sidelined early in the year, like you said, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Kansas, Troy, that gives them quite a bit of buffer to September 26th until you have to play Mississippi State in your first SEC game. Obviously, we know Mississippi State's had a lot of issues on defense in recent years. So in theory, okay, so if he can't get back to October, you still got Jamal Roberts. I mean, this was the best backfield in college football, with Hardy and Roberts, and that 1-2 punch, that tandem, that was the best backfield in college football coming into this year. And also, I think if you take a step back and kind of think about, okay, Austin Simmons has a lot of upside. Like, what if he delivers on that? There's a lot of different paths, like, it feels like this Missouri offense could take. Like, last year, it felt they were pretty limited with the passing game at times. Well, this year, they could be a lot more explosive, have a lot more options. So it's not just they've got one highway with Roberts and Hardy. They've got a couple different paths they could take. So they have as much Hardy. Obviously, we hope he gets out there by the season opener. But if he's not, Roberts, Simmons, and they have a little bit of buffer till he gets back to maybe 100% for SEC play. That's the upside in all this if you're looking at for Missouri.
Yeah, and I didn't even think about this, Stephen. I don't know if you have either, but again, we've highlighted the peanut butter and all these garbage teams, Kansas, that they play early, Troy. I don't even know how to rank those in order of most garbage. Probably Kansas, most garbage, of course. Peanut butter than Troy. But, maybe this is an opportunity, not that you're going to hold Austin Simmons back or that was the plan at all, but heck, maybe this is an opportunity to just unleash him, let him throw it around the yard as much, establish identity with these receivers and real game time action. And then, fingers crossed. I mean, for all we know, Ahmad Hardy's not going to miss a snap, Yeah. But let's say he misses a couple of games. Then all of a sudden, you've got yourself perhaps an established quarterback and someone that could be the most. Again, you listened to Ole Miss people a year ago. They said he was going to win the Heisman. So, if Austin Simmons is that caliber and he gets that passing attack going, and then you get to insert Ahmad Hardy in later, I mean, it's almost like that's a too good to be true situation. You know what I mean?
Right. It's funny. When you think about this Missouri team, as good as they were in defense last year, they could be a lot more explosive offensively. There's a lot of ifs there. I think we kind of touched on the offensive line too. I mean, three starters back, Caden Green's probably going to be a preseason All-American. Like, the foundation is there to have a really dynamic and explosive offense. And the big if Austin Simmons realizes that potential, if Chip Lindsey is able to kind of get all the pieces on the same page. But just kind of thinking about that early season schedule, that road trip to Kansas in week two. I mean, Mike, if I'm thinking week one here, Arkansas Pine Bluff, I want Austin Simmons airing this out. Because also, like, what if Ahmad Hardy doesn't play week one? You don't want Jamal Roberts taking a ton of carries against Arkansas Pine Bluff. You don't need him. You need Austin Simmons to be game ready, experienced, ready to go for that week two trip to Kansas, because Missouri is going to be favored to beat Troy the next week. Road trip early in the season, rivalry. If you can survive that, there's a good chance Missouri also goes on the road, beats Mississippi State, and they're sitting there at 4-0 going into the Florida game. So, Austin Simmons and his growth is crucial to the season. No matter what, it's even more critical now, considering the uncertainty surrounding Ahmad Hardy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, shout out to Mizzou fan, Steven. He is in the comments. He's going wild. We appreciate you, Mizzou fan. Even though it's a rough day, he's being so kind to us. We appreciate you. Some good luck over here. Hopefully, Ahmad Hardy will be okay. Hashtag prayers for Hardy. Thank you, Mizzou fan. And he's also, Stephen, gifted 20 memberships. So shout out. Let me read these off real quick for Mizzou fan. Thank you for your generosity, Mizzou fan. He's gifted Chicken 1515, Scott Fritz, D-Roll, Panther, Jacob Bieber or Believer, that college football guy, Gator Cruiser, Dennis Bone, Terry Hale, Save Point Gaming Lounge, okay, Tampa Rebel, Mr. Woods, Colby, Southern Boy, oh no, I just lost it. I saw Vern Funquist, Marler's in here, I guess, that lurker, Lonesome Kicker, that's the coolest one yet, Super TD, Tony Sims, Rick Russell, Jacob Beard, and Fozzie Wazzy. Welcome to
the family.
Yeah, courtesy Mizzou fan. Appreciate you, buddy.
Appreciate you, Mizzou fan.
That's like $120 he just gifted us.
See, I was doing a small, like, you know, trying to move the Missouri helmet up into the screen today for Ahmad Hardy. That feels like a very small token after his incredible generosity there.
Yeah, so all you cousins that can come hang out with us. We'll be back. I'm going to try to make Shane do it again. The Thursday only cousins call. So hopefully we'll see all of you there. But all right, Stephen, we got a show to get on with. And Stephen came up with a great idea. Biggest X factors in the Southeastern Conference post spring football. But before Stephen, we get to that. Oh, Lord. I've wear the Lane Quitting shirt for a reason, because that son of a gun, he's back again with some nonsense. Anybody that missed it, I don't know how you could have at this point in time, but man, it's like he's trying to get the Civil War of going again or something here. Shout out Lane Kiffin, Vanity Fair. This is a real comment. This is not a troll job or anything, but he said, hey, top recruits would say, hey, coach, we really like you, but my grandparents aren't letting me move to Oxford, Mississippi. That doesn't come up when you say Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Parents are sitting here on the weekend saying the campus diversity feels so great. Feels like there's no segregation. Oh, my God. That's a real quote from Lane Kiffin here. And we want that for our kids because that's the real world. So, oh, buddy. Man, there's a lot of thoughts on this, Stephen. Shout out Lane Kiffin. Someone just described him to me today, Stephen, as the only man that could burn a bridge while standing on it. I mean, that's Lane Kiffin for you right there. So apparently we're segregated at Ole Miss, and according to Lane Kiffin. Now, keep in mind, Stephen, he stayed there for 6 years. He had the opportunity to leave for Auburn. That was offered to him. I'm sure he had many, many, many opportunities to leave Ole Miss. And the segregated, racist place that it is, according to Kiffin, much like they tried to run him off the road and kill him. Remember that this is Kiffin saying this. There's no record of that. But point being, I don't know how in the hell anybody takes anything Lane Kiffin says seriously. It's all bullshit. And he's all about himself and making himself look good. And of course, what does this do? This just hurts Ole Miss, right? A place he's already burned to the damn ground, basically, or he tried. And then, you know, get on the plane or you don't have a job to these assistants. And then, wouldn't you know it, Ole Miss is still playing in the playoff while the portal's going. Oh, my God. And then that was a huge issue. We can't have assistants down there. We can't have coordinators down there. The portal's open. We got to have them recruiting for LSU. Well, it would have been the same damn thing if you were the head coach, you idiot. Like, we can't have it. You can't have it both ways. You can't be over here and recruiting for LSU while working for Ole Miss. I mean, this... Just when it started to die down a little bit, Stephen, he has poured gasoline on this fire with more bullshit, more complete fakery. Ole Miss is not some racist place where players are not welcome. And there's been a laundry list of players come out and their parents come out and said, this is totally a fabrication. And that's all Lane Kiffin is a fabrication to serve his own goods. And... I'll just say this, Stephen. I can't wait to hear what he says about LSU when they fire his ass or he leaves because he, for some scandal because he's going to burn your ass too, just like he's burned everywhere he's been. So you can laugh it up now, but you're going to be hating this guy just like Ole Miss fans do, just like Tennessee fans do, just like Southern Cal fans do, just like Alabama. I mean, everywhere the damn guy goes, except for maybe FAU, but. Yeah, you're next, LSU. So I can't wait to see what he says about you because it's going to be something crazy.
Mike, you know, the crazy thing about this is, you know, there's a world where both of these parties involved, like Ole Miss and LSU, got what they wanted out of it. you know, LSU, Kiffin got what he wanted, which was like one of the premier jobs in college football. He's at a place that's won national championships. If he thinks that LSU gives him a better chance to win a national championship, hey, no problem. But also, Ole Miss gave him a pretty big lifeline. Like, I think he would have eventually bounced back from FAU to somewhere. But there was a lot of, obviously, there's a lot of drama. There's always a lot of controversy wherever he goes. Well, Ole Miss gave him the lifeline after FAU to get back to the SEC. They worked hand in hand. It's not like they gave him any shortage of resources. They gave him everything they needed to try and go out and compete for the national championship, get the assistant coaches, and they did. They obviously, they worked, went far this year. He wasn't the guy in charge. But it's also, you know, thinking about that world where LSU and Kiffin got what it wanted, and Ole Miss has a really good coach in Pete Golding. And it's like, why do you have to burn the bridge anymore? You got what you wanted. You got the premier job. Why trash the place that gave you a lifeline and gave you an opportunity to chase the national championship and to go out and get the resources in the portal and everything you need? It's like, man, just move on. Like, let it go. There's no need to keep taking shots at Ole Miss. And if anything, this only raises the bar for his expectations in year one. He's tried to downplay it quite a bit in some of the spring media availability, but just saying things like this against Ole Miss, you're going to like light, you know, the intensity level even higher for September, which means you got to go to Oxford and win. And if you kind of be a little bit more humble about this, and maybe those expectations would not have been like, hey, you got to make the playoff in year one. Maybe not, but you get my point. Either way, Mike, I just think both parties could get what they want out of here. I don't really understand why you got to like trash Ole Miss in the process. They're doing well. LSU and Kiffin are going to do well. It's just a strange, like, it's a strange avenue to be going down here.
Right. And right before we went live, Steven, I highly recommend The Cousins. Go check it out if you're interested. The author of this article that met with Lane Kiffin that put this to print, he says on the Paul Feinbaum show, he's getting interviewed. He said, yeah, I think Kiffin, you know, threw this out there and then kind of knew he had screwed up. And he's like, oh, this is pretty bad, right? Like, I probably shouldn't have said this. And then he said the next day he doubled down and said the same damn thing. So, yeah, I mean, again, this was not taken out of context. This is not... you know, fake news. It's not clickbait, whatever the hell you want to call it. This is what the man said, according to Vanity Fair. And I mean, it shouldn't be surprised. Shouldn't be surprised, Steve, because I'm pretty sure, too, the whole time he was down there, like even Stephen A. said something like this last fall, I do believe. And Kiffin was like, this ain't 1940, whatever. You know what I mean? Like he combated that. It's not like that anymore. And what was his famous line? This place needed... I needed this place more than they needed me, you know? And then now he's just lit it on fire with damn gasoline. So that there's a reason, Steven. There's a reason. ESPN did this documentary on him. And hey, you can check the record. I said, hey, they've asked us to promote it. And I said, I cannot support this. This is not reality. The Ole Miss fans jumped on my ass. But now they've come to find out. I'm not a shill for some bullshit. You know, if it's reality, if they wanted to put out a Lane Kiffin documentary and he's saying I'm flawed and I screwed up and this, that, and the other, maybe I would have promoted that. But I won't promote BS. And, you know, if nothing else, you're not getting BS from this show. That's my vow to you.
Mike, I think, you know, the whole thing that's just kind of mind-boggling to this is that Lane Kiffin is very good at his job. He's a top 10 coach in college football. He is an offensive mastermind and he is his own like worst enemy at times. And it's also funny to think about this too, like his social media presence, like, isn't it always like quotes from books and, you know, like all these kind of like, you know, holistic big picture thoughts. And it's like, isn't it like let them theory, all these things like, man, if that's all, you know, you're tweeting all this stuff, believe it. Just like, just move on from Ole Miss. Don't kind of continue to ignite this because come September, October, all these bills could be due if Kiffin is sitting there at like 2-3, whatever the record is, or Ole Miss is thriving. It's not going to look good. So, man, just move on from Ole Miss. Celebrate the fact you're at one of the best jobs in college football. Celebrate your success. Ole Miss was a big part of that. And, you know, get ready for 2026 instead of thinking about Ole Miss the whole time. By the way, has anybody found Juice Kiffin? What's he up to these days?
I'm pretty sure he's still in Oxford. They may have. Okay. I think they drug him back for a promotional shoot just to be like, we didn't abandon the dog. And then they probably just abandoned him again. You know what?
Mm. That's another negative, like in the book, right? Not great with dogs.
All right, Stephen, we must move on because again, we try to hit on all the teams, even the ones that Coach Kiffin is buried in the damn ground, which is about half of them by this point in time. But you're still getting covered on this show, damn it, because you're still in the SEC and you're all important to us, unlike Lane Quinton. But Stephen, could you like explain the SEC's biggest X factors before we dive into it?
Yeah, Mike, I think one of the things I kind of came up with the idea of X factors was when I was going through the magazine and trying to do like whether it was position rankings or all conference team, I come across a team or a position and go, man, if this guy hits, it might change my thinking about this position or this team. And I didn't want to pick just quarterbacks for every team, because obviously, like if they hit X factor, this could change the complexion of the season. But maybe a guy like a post-hype sleeper, guy who was hyped up, maybe he didn't deliver, but maybe now's the time. Trying to identify maybe a difference maker that we haven't talked about this offseason. So really, I kind of think about it as there's maybe a position group with a question, some turnover, and trying to identify somebody if they step up, this position becomes a strength and maybe changes our thinking about a team or position group, or could mean the difference between making the playoff or playing in the Outback Bowl later this year.
All right. Well, since Mizzou fan was so kind, Stephen, and gave us a donation, how about we do Missouri first? Who's that biggest X factor exiting spring football for the Tigers?
I almost went with Austin Simmons or Jamal Roberts, Mike, but there's somebody on this Missouri defense that I've been wanting to talk about, and I think it's Darius Smith. You know, he transferred to Georgia from Georgia to Missouri. And I think he was kind of supposed to be like Damon Wilson before Damon Wilson, you know, thrived last year. But of course, he had the injury. He missed 2024. He came back last season, picked up 4 sacks. The reason why I think about him as an X factor is he feels like somebody who's extremely talented. And the turnover on the defensive front with so many guys gone, I think you feel good if you're Missouri about your linebackers, questions in the secondary and defensive line. But what if Smith really hits this year, another year removed from the injury, that kind of explosiveness off the edge? Like if he hits, he solves some of your problems along the defensive line and this defense as a whole. So I just think getting Darius Smith kind of, maybe does he reach expectations for this defense? It could go a long way to solving some of these questions for Missouri's front this year.
Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of buzz this spring, Stephen, that Darius Smith is in rare form entering this pivotal year for him, where he does need to step up given all the loss of the production on the defensive side of the football for Missouri. So I think that's an excellent choice, and one where, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I always value these guys that have been in these wars in the SEC. They know what they're getting in for. And I mean, there's a lot of guys that come into this conference and then we hear great things and maybe even make an impact right away. But just that, then October hits, then November hits, and you're like, is that guy still even on the damn team? That can't be Darius Smith this year. He's got to be one of the best players for Missouri, and I think he's got the pedigree to do it. So I think that's an excellent selection by you.
You know, Mike, I think you said something there, too, about you know, the October, November, the grind. And I think just as a whole depth, you know, for Missouri defense, like if you're losing, you have 0 returning starters, like it doesn't necessarily take into account like snap counts and how many guys are returning who played last year, but just like there's like a lot of turnover. And so, you know, you got some experience come back in the interior, you got some good linebackers, like, so if you got to be able to get to the quarterback this year. And so if he kind of translates that production we saw in limited time, plus maybe starting to get back to some of that like high school recruiting height, maybe you saw at Georgia, like all of a sudden that kind of solves your pass rush. So I think it was good to hear some good things out of spring, but now he's kind of going from maybe kind of being a part-time player to move a full-time player. And he's going to have to kind of amp up that production regardless of how that fits out this year.
Oh, and I meant to say one other thing, Stephen. We started talking Kip and I was seeing red. I forgot all about it, but I did want to mention in case anybody missed it. I'm sure most of the Missouri fans saw it, but our week 2 game against hated Little K, Kansas, that has been announced officially as Friday. Maybe it was already Friday. I don't know. But Fox announced they're going to broadcast it 8:00 Eastern, 7 Central, nationally televised. So, you know, old Fox, Steven, that little old network that covers a little 10. Anytime they can gobble up an SEC team, they're like, we get an SEC? You know, we got to put them prime time. So that'll be a big time Friday game. Missouri whooping Kansas ass. And then they also just announced about a couple hours ago, I think it was, again, Fox, they see SEC, they're like, oh, we got a platform this because we have but four teams we can showcase. But with the SEC, they got about 14. Where Oklahoma, Michigan, that is also going to be nationally televised. I think their stupid noon kickoff game. So
yeah, big noon kickoff that Saturday.
Yeah, well, that's when you really get that energy high, Steven, when you're kicking off 11 a.m. Central. But again, that's Fox. That's as good as they can get. So, hey, there are no good, I guess, no good Big Ten games week two. So we got to get the SEC in there, which makes sense. But it's just going to amp it up that much more because that's a pivotal game for Oklahoma. And I assume for Michigan, that's probably one of two or three challenging games they got this year.
There were some clunkers last year on the big noon kickoff. So it's not surprising that they would try to get Oklahoma, Michigan, anytime they get Ohio State in there, you know, they're going to pick it. So, yeah, I mean, I think from importance to the season, I think this game, Oklahoma at Michigan, is massive just for like what it could mean for the playoff position. Because Michigan, like you said, the schedule's pretty favorable. They get Ohio State late in the year. This could be for playoff purposes. Like, wouldn't shock me if Oklahoma and Michigan are kind of in the same range, you know, for playoff positioning. But also just think about if Oklahoma goes up there and gets that victory, important, you know, like I said, for positioning, but also, hey, these nine games in the SEC aren't getting any easier. So if you can go up to the Big Ten and check off a big victory, bragging rights for the conference, playoff positioning, kind of putting yourself in a better position for the postseason. There's a lot at stake in that week two game. And man, I can't wait to see that Oklahoma defense play Bryce Underwood and see John Mateer against that Michigan defense too. So let's get it going right now. I'm ready. I don't know about you.
Yeah, so yeah, you said it was a slightly easy schedule. I swear I didn't even look at it. I just knew it was because it's freaking Big Ten. But they're a damn joke. But you know who's not a joke? Simply Texas. We appreciate you, buddy. You gave us a donation here, Steven, for the real UT. Tennessee. Texas, its own X factor. But seriously, I would say either the offensive line or the backup quarterback if the offensive line goes south. So what do you say, Steven? What is the biggest X factor for them Texas Longhorns?
I had two picks, so I'll let Simply Texas chime in here. Let me know which one he likes better. I was thinking maybe Lance Jackson too, because you have Colin Simmons on one side. So, you know, just trying to kind of alleviate the pressure from like your top, you know, All-America end, like making sure you got kind of pressure coming from both, living up, kind of taking away the double teams and triple teams. I think he could also kind of fit as a breakout candidate too. So I did want to bring up Connor Robertson, who started at center and kind of in the second half of last season. Hudson started and Robertson ended the year as the starting center. Just thinking about this offensive line for Texas, I think there's a lot of optimism and for good reason. You've got Goosby coming back at left tackle. Brandon Baker looks like he's going to kick inside. Melvin Ciani is going to be starting at right tackle, it looks like. So Connor Robertson kind of anchoring the center. Like we saw this line sort of come into its own late last season. I thought they played better down the stretch than at the start of the season. So now you've got some continuity at one of the most important positions. And if Robertson can continue to progress that we saw last year, I think there's a chance he's one of the SEC's better centers this year too.
Interesting. Line of scrimmage. That's going to make or break them Longhorns, huh? Even though everyone's enamored with Arch Manning, and for good reason. Including Steven. He's got the poster up on his wall. Arch Manning, of course, and Cam Coleman and Wingo and all these transfer running backs. But yeah, it's not going to matter if they don't have the guys up front. So I love those selections by you, Steven. I think you absolutely nailed it. You did not get distracted by the shiny objects out there. You're going with the meat and potatoes, which is what this league is based upon.
Lesson learned from last season, right? I thought, Kyle Flood, Texas talent, they're just going to churn out the offensive line, and it didn't work out. So just making sure we emphasize the offensive line, the good and the bad coming into the season a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Hey, shout out. Does that say Earl Monroe? Stephen Earl. He gifted Corey Hill. Corey, welcome to
the family.
Yeah. Let me know who your team is, Earl, and we'll do with them next. But hey, I thought we were on a little bit of a roll there with Oklahoma, Stephen. So let's go back to the Sooners. Who do you got as the biggest X factor for Oklahoma?
Mike, I'm going to just go ahead and admit that I kind of cheated here. So you can feel free to like close me out of the show. I just picked depth on the defensive line. I just think, you know, insert whether it's the transfers, Ozuwalu, Bishop Thomas, like the second wave, we saw Okoye sort of like be the breakout star off the edge this spring. I think if you're Oklahoma, you feel really, really good about your frontline talent. But as we know, it's a long season if you want to go deep in the playoff. There's 9 games in the SEC. I feel good about the frontline talent, but how that depth comes together is going to be especially crucial because you get Ole Miss, you get Texas A&M, you get Missouri in November. I just kind of went with depth on the defensive line because I felt good about what Oklahoma has coming back up front, but just maybe how this depth on the defensive line could play out, could matter when we start to get to some of these swing games in November.
Mm-hmm. Well, it may be an X factor for you. You know, is it fair to give the benefit of the doubt to Brent Venables and, you know, our outstanding GM, Jim Nagy, that they have kind of acquired the pieces necessary to have that quality depth that they will need if they're going to win the SEC, if they're going to make the playoff and hopefully make a run at the national championship? Or is that maybe too big of an assumption just because that's such a difficult position to kind of stack talent nowadays?
Mike, there is a track record of success for Brent Venables, like going back to Clemson of finding the, like, it's just back when he was at Clemson, every year when I was doing like the position rankings, it was like, oh, they lost 3 guys. That don't worry about it. Just put Clemson at 1 and forget about it in the ACC. They may not be the SEC's best defensive line. They may be like 2 or 3 this year, wherever it ends up. Mike, I feel pretty confident that Brent Venables is going to find the right answer. So along with the depth on the defensive line, I actually did think about maybe giving this nod to our guy, Hayden Hansen, because we talked about how important it is that Oklahoma's got a tight end who can block, who can catch, and some of the things it can do for this offense this year. So I do have a lot of confidence in Venables to crank out some depth. But I also think it is still a little bit of a question, especially with the long season and SEC play being 9 games this year.
Well, that's exactly where Cousin Mike Andrews went. Stephen, he says it's the running game, so tight ends and the offensive line. So he's kind of right there with you.
I'm very high in Oklahoma's offensive line this year. I think there is a chance this group goes, you know, from whatever you want to label it last year to being maybe top 10 in the country. Good. Just think the young talent, that experience is going to translate. Certainly got to run the ball better, but having Hayden Hansen's a big part of that too.
Hey, shout out Simply Texas gave us another donation there, Stephen. He said, Lassen is the GOAT of college football. Can't disagree with anything he says, unless it's pro Oklahoma or pro A&M. So you didn't go there. I was going to do A&M next, but he gave a donation. So A&M, you have been relegated for the time being. I see old Cousin Emily in the comments. So how about we do Auburn next, Stephen? Who's that biggest X factor for Auburn post-spring?
Mike, we seem to be on a theme tonight of offensive lines, right? So let's go to a player who is projected to play a lot at tackle, Stanton Rammel. Guy who's transferring in from Michigan State. He was injured last year for the most part at Michigan State. He played about 200 snaps. The year before, he played just over 600 in 2024. So he's been an immediate contributor to Michigan State's offensive line from the day he stepped on campus. But I bring him up because you're also looking at a transfer at right tackle, probably a transfer at center, maybe 2 transfers at guard. Left tackle, protecting your most important asset on offense and Byron Brown is going to be critical. So my biggest worry for this Auburn team is this offensive line. But if you solve left tackle, you got a guy in Cole Best at center, he's got some experience in this offense. Like, you start to kind of put the pieces into place. But Rammel was probably not a high level, like all Big Ten guy at Michigan State. And now he's stepping into the fire in the SEC where they're going to play a lot of good defenses this year. That's kind of my X factor, is just seeing how his development shakes out in this offensive line this year.
Hey, shout out Vol Tiger. I think he nailed it. No Hugh Freeze is the biggest X factor for Auburn, which I love that commentary. But no, I absolutely offensive line, and they have loaded up with the transfers. So, you know, that'll be critical just to see how quickly that can be implemented. But, you know, I've heard it 10,000 times, Stephen, where Byron Brown, can he come into this conference and compete at a high level immediately? And man, I just don't have any concerns about that anymore. Maybe that's not right, but you just look around. I mean, look at Diego Pavia coming from New Mexico State and dominating the SEC. We just had Trinidad Chambliss came from Ferris State. You know, cousin Shane and I would say Trinidad's the best quarterback in this conference. I mean, it didn't take him long to acclimate. Joey Aguilar from Appalachian State led the SEC in passing. You know, we could make example over example. Shout out Ahmad Hari. You know, hopefully he's you know back on the field and he's fully healthy and recovers from his wound. ULM, you know, tearing up the SEC. I think we've got to get away from like, well, I don't know, can he, you know, how long is it going to take? Can he really do it at this level? Because I hate to say it. Hey, we are the biggest SEC homers, not Steven, but Shane and I, biggest SEC homers out there. But I think we even would admit the SEC in 26 is not the SEC that it was in 2016 even, to where I just think it's easier to make an instant impact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think where I would take this one is, and immediately when you mentioned Byron Brown, my first thought was Diego Pavia, because you know you could argue if you want to, like, Byron Brown played at a higher level in the American, played a lot better teams than New Mexico State in Conference USA. And it translated probably because he had that experience within the offense. Like, it was easy to hit the ground running from day one. Pavia probably could have thrived outside of that in some other system, but this kind of system was tailor-made for it. Byron Brown's doing the same thing. You know, his South Florida offense was made for him to thrive, and I suspect that's going to continue. I think maybe where I would go is, individual talent kind of like supersedes the conference sometimes. And sometimes, like, there are like special cases, like Ahmad Hardy wasn't the highest profile recruit, but he does some things really well that kind of made him fly under the radar. And then he goes into the SEC and dominates. Like, those traits kind of translated. And I think the same thing is true with Byron Brown. Maybe he's not going to lead the conference in passing yards or anything like that, Mike. But at the same time, like, you get the complete package. Like, you get the rushing, you get the intangibles of knowing the offense. So I'm not worried about kind of like Byron Brown, like the spring game performance. Like, I'm not worried about it at all. I think once the live action actually starts, and that experience in that offense is going to shine. And I think he's going to end up being one of the quarterbacks probably in the top half of the conference this year.
All right. Shout out Arkansas. We got a donation here, Steven, from Taylor Ginzer. Woo pig, gonna need all the timeline and cheers. TNL and cheers this season. So let's do it. Where's the X factor for them Hogs,
Steve? Mike, I have two players, but they sort of play the same position. Let's go with the interior of the defensive line. It is about stopping the run. Arkansas was 15th in the SEC last year against the run. It's a line of scrimmage league. So Arkansas needs big body defenders to step up. And I think Hunter Osborne, the transfer from Virginia, he started his career at Alabama. He played some snaps at Virginia last year, but not a full-time starter. He's somebody that Ryan Silverfield highlighted in the spring as somebody who could be a real difference maker for him. And also David Oki, who transferred in from Abilene Christian last year, took a redshirt season. Transferring up, maybe needed a season to kind of develop in the SEC room. But those two guys are going to play a pretty big role on the interior. You've got a great edge rusher in Quincy Rhodes. I'm just thinking, you know, I think Arkansas's got some nice pieces on offense, but this defense has lagged. And the only way this team's going to have a shot at a bowl game is if this defense takes a big step forward. And one of the ways is to stop the run. So Oki and Osborne, two guys on the interior, I think could really make a difference if they can step up, stop the run. That helps Quincy Rhodes. That helps the defense as a whole.
Yeah, and just, you know, again, I mocked it at the time, but now I'm seeing it as perhaps a silver lining, Stephen, where Coach Silverfield came out here and said, hey, we're going to have the damn smartest team. GPA's off the charts. And again, that's kind of comical because no one cares, right? But if it's true and you look at his track record, turnover margin, penalties were generally low every year at Memphis. And that was critical to the Tigers having winning seasons year after year under Ryan Silverfield. To, you know, are they going to come out here and do this necessarily in the SEC? You can't just do it just not making mistakes. But, you know, that's where it's got to start, I think, for Arkansas. Just don't beat yourself like they have. I love Sam Pittman, but that's they did it constantly where they would get tight in these big game situations. They'd fumble the ball or throw a pick or what have you. And they would just beat themselves time and time again. And if we could simply get away from that, I think the record's going to get better just in itself, just like that.
The Memphis game was a pretty like case study for this last year, right? It was a game that Arkansas probably should have won. And of course, the late mishaps did Arkansas no favors in that game. Always when I see coaches like say we're going to be the smartest team, this and this, and you're like, oh gosh, like it's probably not going to work out great this year, right? If like that's where you're going to. But at the same time, I think Ryan Silverfield is getting at is, and I think if you gave all the Arkansas coaches maybe like true serum, they probably would say like, yeah, you know, this is proper rebuilding. We're not expecting to compete for the college football playoff this year. It'd be great if it did. But I think the margins here, it's like, you know, like you said, When the game is right here in your grasp, you can't have penalties, you can't have turnovers, you can't beat yourself. You're at a talent deficit probably to most of the teams in the SEC right now that are on your schedule. So just don't beat yourself. Like find ways to kind of work around the margins. Maybe it's a trick play like on special teams, win the turnover battle, maybe make your opponent have penalties. Like do the small things right and the bounces probably go in your direction until you can kind of catch up in sort of the talent spot. So I see where Ryan Silverfield is going with that. And I think he's had a pretty good offseason so far in terms of roster building. I think he's saying all the right things. I think it's going to get tougher once we get to kickoff, but I think he's doing all the right things right now.
Well, I could only imagine, Stephen, if I was a diehard Razorback, I'd probably have a drinking problem. If you do, go check out our friends, cheershealth.com. Hopefully you can see that. I don't know if it's focusing or not, but cheershealth.com, promo code THATSEC to get you 20% off your Cheers After Alcohol Aid. What is this? Cheers. I keep rambling on about, Stephen. It's just a little pill. You take it after your last drink or right before bed, and the Cheers promise you're going to feel 50% better the next day or your money back. You can't beat it. Lane Kiffin, we'll probably send him some after these crazy comments he's making. He needs some Cheers in his life, it sounds like, because he is just living off tears, apparently. But Cheers, you can find this at Walgreens, CVS, any of your local drugstores, but you're not going to get 20% off, and you're not going to get, I don't believe they're going to give you that 50% better guarantee unless you go to cheershealth.com, promo code THATSEC. There's a link in the show notes as well. Stephen, which team you think most needs this Cheers?
I you know, it's funny you said Lane Kiffin, Mike, because I was like, I think Lane Kiffin kind of replaced the Arkansas fan base as the one who probably needed the most Cheers, you know, after today. And we did kind of talk about Auburn and Arkansas. They would be like maybe the SEC's like top one and two in power rankings for needing Cheers after the end of last season, right?
Give that pill a whiffing, says Ken. So shout out cousin Ken. All right. How about for old Stephen Up? He's a big Stephen Lassen fan, Stephen. How about we do Alabama next? Who's that biggest X factor for the Crimson Tide post-spring?
Mike, it was too easy to go with quarterbacks, right? I mean, Austin Mack, Keelan Russell, everybody's watching the quarterback battle. But I want to go defense because this Alabama defense has got a lot of new faces in the defensive front. And a lot of these guys are transfers. Really excited to see Yonze Pierre and his development again off the edge this year. But I wanted to spotlight Caleb Woodson, inside linebacker. This is a place where Alabama's got some inexperience. Woodson is a senior. He's played at Virginia Tech. He was a little bit banged up last season, but a pretty solid player for the most part during his career. at Virginia Tech. So I'm just kind of thinking, like, could he be the quarterback of this defense? Like, getting guys lined up, being the second level kind of enforcer, stopping the run. You know, physicality is a big push for this Alabama offensive line. Alabama wanted to get bigger kind of on the defensive front to be able to stop the run and be physical this offseason too. So I'm just thinking about the inexperience, but also like his experience as a senior from Virginia Tech. And can he kind of translate and minimize some of this transition with all the transfers and be the guy who gets all the guys lined up, helps them stop the run, given that inexperience elsewhere in that room, inside linebacker room for Alabama. So interested to see Caleb Woodson at linebacker for Alabama this year.
No doubt, Steven, and shout out to one of our X Factors, Cousin Benjamin. We appreciate you, buddy. You're a member for 20 months, Steven. I got family members that I haven't spoke to in 20 months, but Benjamin is here all the time. So we miss you, buddy. Hopefully you're doing well out there. Steven up. Appreciate you, buddy. Give us a donation, Steven.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Steven up. He Thank says, you, always up. Appreciate Steven Lass's analysis and insight. So, yeah, I think that was a great deep dive there, Steven, on Bama's X Factor. And, yeah, like you said, it would have just been super easy. And, I mean, Steven doesn't do – he never takes the easy route. But if he had hit that easy button – he definitely would have said quarterbacks. I think that's kind of the captain obvious one. But, yeah, I think this, to your point, I mean, defense has not been an issue necessarily, but it's not been quite as dominant. But particularly if the offensive line, new quarterback, you know, what do we have at running back? I know we're all thrilled with the freshmen we've got coming in, but that may take a little while to get going. Hopefully by the Georgia game we'll be up to speed. But if not, I mean, this defense is probably going to have to win us a couple games. I mean, at Kentucky, perhaps. I still think Bama should win that handily. But Florida State, I don't know. Florida State beat you last year. South Carolina, if they rebound in a big way, that's a dangerous game. Just the point being, defense is going to – they may have to hold the day. Mississippi State, another one where, you know, the record's been poor, but the offense has been quite good at times under Jeff Lebby. So – we're going to need the defense to come out prepared for the Crimson Tide.
Playing Mississippi State a week before playing Georgia looks like a trap game for Alabama, doesn't it? That could be really tricky, Mike, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about the defense, especially given the question marks that are there for the Alabama offense. Now, I think there's a lot of promise for this offense. Like if it's Keelan Russell, if it's Austin Mack, I think they're going to be fine at quarterback no matter who's in there. And then maybe Noah Rogers, the receiver from NC State transfer, who was banged up in the spring game. If you get him back, plus some of the younger players developing, like you got something cooking with skill, talent, and quarterbacks. Really just all comes down to this offensive line. And so it is going to be kind of incumbent on this defense to lead the way early. I like the secondary. I mean, I think the secondary is going to be up there as one of the best in the SEC, one of the best in college football, but it's like everything in front of that. You got a lot of experience to the inside linebacker, a lot of new faces on the defensive line. How does this all mesh together? The good news is that schedule is pretty favorable. And also good news for Alabama is that Gus Malzahn is not calling the plays for Florida State this year. So that's probably some relief. But yeah, the early part of the schedule, I think it's going to be let the defense lead the way and the offense comes along. And then by the heart of SEC play, you know, maybe you got a pretty balanced offense and defense there and you kind of make that playoff run again.
All right. Hey, how about for Cousin Ben, Steven? We talk about Georgia. What are for them dogs? Who's that biggest X factor post spring?
I think it's got to be a receiver. And I know we've talked about Isaiah Cannon a ton this offseason, the Georgia Tech transfer. I wanted to go with somebody different. And this guy kept showing up all offseason in whether it was practice reports, pre-spring analysis. It's Talon Taylor. A guy that I think a lot of Georgia coaches and fans hope has a breakout season. Former four-star, high four-star, five-star prospect by some services. He was injured last year. Ton of talent. Only had two catches. You know, he's a guy that we don't know a lot about because he didn't play a lot last year. But if he hits this offseason and develops, takes that next step to go with Isaiah Cannon, to go with London Humphreys, Georgia's outlook at receiver suddenly looks a lot better. So he could be a breakout candidate, but I also think he's an X factor too.
You know, Stephen, I wanted to ask you something. I just came to mind here because I was on with Cole Cube. Like, he was posting Paul Feinbaum's show. I think it was last week I was on, and he asked me about Gunnar Stockton, which that's kind of what jogged my memory. You're talking these Georgia receivers, but Gunnar not being perceived as one of the better quarterbacks returning in the country. Any idea why that is? I mean, he was suggesting maybe, he's not a NFL prospect necessarily, even though he could do that, but, not a touted recruit, not a big time NFL prospect. And also Mike Bobo was mentioned as well as perhaps a reason that some people are not fired up about Gunnar and Georgia's offense. Any idea why Gunnar doesn't get it much respect?
Mike, do you think my guess to this would probably be that he's probably not like the pro prospect that an Arch Manning, Dante Moore is at Oregon, also Trinidad Chambliss, like this flashy statistical season that, Chambliss had last year. I mean, Stockton was seventh in the SEC in passing yards. I think probably the area where you have to think about with Stockton is like the complete package. Like, he gives you the rushing, he gives you the leadership too. I thought he grew up a lot last season, especially like we talk about that Tennessee game, some of the clutch throws that he made. I think maybe the high end, like, is he a difference maker or is he a guy who's just a really, really solid quarterback, does all the right things, but you also need that elite defense and run game to go with it. So I think that's probably a large part of it. It's just the stats aren't there. And also, like, the high end, like, people are probably enamored more with like the CJ Carr, Arch Manning, Dante Moore, elite first round talent kind of stuff, I think.
Mm-hmm. Highly efficient, steady, but maybe not spectacular. Maybe that's all part of it. And, he doesn't come with that wow factor. But at the end of the day, as Cousin Shane says 26 times a show, at the end of the day, I don't know that really matters. I mean, it's just, did you get the win? Did you win the SEC? I know they haven't gotten it done in the playoff, but if that's coming, Georgia fans will take that over, a guy that would perceive spectacular talent as opposed to someone that is just sometimes it's derogatory people as a game manager, but sometimes that's all you need to do. When you have elite talent around you, is not screw up the game plan like so many other quarterbacks do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think back to 2 years ago in the national championship game. Will Howard and Riley Leonard were the two quarterbacks in that game, and both those guys were drafted late in the NFL draft. And I would say they were not high on the like NFL physical traits, like we talk about with Arch or Dante Moore or CJ Carr or Chambliss, one of these guys, but they did all the right things. And I think with Georgia, my biggest question, kind of why we highlighted the receiver, is their turnover receiver, but also at large, I just need this offense to generate more big passing plays. Like, I just don't think you can get to the national championship game now with just, trying to run the ball, play defense, maybe a big play here too. It's really hard to go like 10, 11 plays. Like, you got to be able to have some pop there. So I think that's kind of where Stockton could take that step forward this year. And maybe he's not getting a lot of credit either, because Georgia is a well-rounded team. They run the ball. They're going to play good defense. Like, he's a sum of the parts. He's a very, very good sum of the parts that Georgia has, but some of the teams are going to be more quarterback dependent and statistical driven, which is why I think it hurts him in this national conversation. I still think he's a top 10 quarterback probably coming into this year. So I would agree. He's not getting enough national love this preseason.
Hey, shout out Simply Texas. He's back with another donation, Steven. It must be so boring being in a Big 10, Big 12, or any other conference and not having a great show like that SEC podcast to listen to. We appreciate you, Simply Texas.
I love it, Mike. It's good to see all the cousins showing up tonight. It's a Monday night in May, and we're talking some, we're going in depth, right? This is great.
I love it. All right. Well, no to hell. I was going to say LSU, but since Kiffin's such a jerk, we're going to hold off on them, and we'll talk some Ole Miss. Biggest X factor for them Rebels, Steven.
I think we could go a couple different ways with this one, Mike. We talked offensive line last week, so I wanted to go to the other side of the ball and spotlight Cam Franklin. Because Prince Will transferred to LSU, he had 9 sacks last year. Franklin had 5. I'm just thinking about this Ole Miss pass rush. They tried to bring in some guys through the portal as well. Defense as a whole, I like what Ole Miss did in the portal to fortify that second level at linebacker. But generating a pass rush this season might be one of those preseason questions that kind of flies under the radar. So just looking at what Ole Miss lost, can Cam Franklin take that next step? Because his pressure rate, he generated a lot of pressure last year. It just didn't translate into sacks. So I'm kind of wondering, hey, second year as the starter, you got a little bit more experience under your belt. You've got to be the guy. Maybe some of that kind of havoc that we saw last year kind of translates into actual sacks. Game-changing type of plays. He could also fit in breakout, but also think he's kind of a key piece to this defense because they really do have to replace some guys in the pass rush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting selection. Another one who's been through these SEC wars. He's been playing since he was a freshman. Now he's an upperclassman, so very familiar with Pete Golding's system. And for years and years and years, Stephen, obviously going back to Alabama and even at Ole Miss, you know, they have really done a nice job in Pete Golding's defense developing a lot of these linemen into NFL draft picks. So Cam could be that quite the next in that long list of players to go to the league. So, yeah, I really like that one.
I think Will Eccles is probably one of the nation's most underrated defenders coming back this preseason. What do you think about the other side of the ball, Mike, and maybe someone like a Caleb Cunningham at receiver? We talked about offensive line last week. You could pencil in either tackle too, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. I think so as well. And it may be asking too much. And man, this is bad because I'm blanking on the guy's name. But when everybody transfers 9,000 times, who's the guy that was at Bama, Texas, then Syracuse? And now he's at Ole Miss.
Jonte Cook, yeah.
Yeah, he's another one that I would have my eye on. I don't know that he's necessarily going to be, you know, all SEC or anything, but if they could get something out of him, I think that would really help the offense.
He had a good year at Syracuse last season, too, and a Syracuse offense that had some really bad quarterback play after Steve Angeli got hurt early in the season. So I think very talented guy who has bounced around, but maybe the light switch kind of clicked last year up at Syracuse, and now he goes to an offense that has a lot of turnover, needs kind of playmakers who have kind of the quickness and the speed to make this offense go. He's very high on my maybe like impact transfers at receiver. So, yeah, like Deuce Alexander, Caleb Cunningham, Jonte Cook, and throw in Gill, the other Syracuse transfer. I think Ole Miss loses a lot. Just one of their top 6 statistical pass catchers are back, but I think they're going to be fine at receiver.
Well, they should be because they got a heck of a quarterback and running back to pair with them. You know what?
Yeah, Mike, that's the thing with this Ole Miss offense is like, you know, you start to – think of like, okay, if they can solve the tackles and they reload receiver, man, this thing is going to be just as good, if not better than last season. They're better on defense. So Pete Golding is set up for a ton of success in year one. He's got the best setup of maybe any first year coach coming into the season.
All right. How about someone we haven't hit on, I don't think, this entire episode, Stephen? How about the South Carolina Gamecocks? Who would be that post-spring X factor for Beamer and company?
I think the correct answer is the knee of Jacarius Peak. So let's just stay in the offensive line. Let's pick Carter Miller, the new center for South Carolina. This South Carolina offensive line is very much in transition this offseason. New scheme, new coach, new pieces. How does it all fit together? Super, super important because of the expectations of a bounce back and also to protect Lenora Sellers. Carter Miller, he's played over 2,000 career snaps. He's been at James Madison. He's been at Louisiana Monroe. He's been at UCF. He has bounced around. He's been a frequent flyer in college football. So it is, he's coming into this situation with experience, and he's had kind of the experience with transitioning schools quickly and kind of getting up to speed. So new system, new players, how does this all fit together? Figuring out and solidifying your starting center position is pretty important given the injuries and transition that we're seeing at the edges for the South Carolina offensive line.
Yeah, and I'm hearing, you know, it's I go back and forth, Stephen. One week I hear something and I'm like, oh man, the team's going to be good. And then I hear something else, I'm like, oh, I don't know about it. But they're apparently deeper at running back, deeper at receiver. And we all know Sellers, when he has time, he could be a dynamic player. So there's a lot of reasons to be excited, I think, if you're a Gamecock fan. None bigger, perhaps, than the addition of Kendall Browse and Randy Clements, the offensive line coach. So, you know, what can they get out of this unit, though, is it really is going to determine the fate of this football team, and very well could determine the fate of Shane Beaver's job there in Columbia. So a lot of expectations, a lot of pressure on this offensive line. Can't wait to see if, you know, if they hold up their end of the bargain.
Really, really, really hope Jacarius Peake is back and in full form early in the season, because that could really transform this offensive line, Mike, just because, you know, he was good at NC State. He's kind of one of the highest profile left tackles in the portal. If you got him, you've got Carter Miller, you got some of the other guys with experience and other transfers. Like, I think you got the makings of a much improved line. And I think it really helps that Randy Clements and Kendall Briles have kind of worked together at a lot of different places. So they know the system, they know each other. It's a pretty easy mesh. So I could easily talk myself into the South Carolina offensive line if Jacarius Peake is back early in the season or by game one.
All right. How about, wait for Cousin Shane? How about Tennessee, Stephen? Who's that X factor for the Vols?
Mike, don't hang up on me. Let's go quarterbacks, because it's the biggest X factor, one of the biggest X factors, I think, in the SEC. And here's why. I feel good about Tennessee's offensive line. I like their receiving core. DeShaun Bishop is back. I think the defense is going to be better by default, and I like the Jim Knowles hire. And I think so, better by default, plus Jim Knowles, plus the transfers. I think that defense is going to take a big step forward. But how fast does Tennessee find the right answer at quarterback? I trust Josh Heupel to do so, but George McIntyre, Faison Brandon, both very inexperienced. How long does it take? And especially when you look at the schedule, Georgia Tech, Texas, road trip to Arkansas, all in the first half of the season, and also a home game against Auburn in there too. So solidifying and figuring out your quarterback situation could really obviously help Tennessee make a playoff run, because I think the schedule's not too terrible. And I think there's a lot to like personnel wise about this team, assuming you also think the defense takes a big step forward like I do.
Right. Well, I could have guessed you were going to say quarterback, Steven. So I, and not that that's not the right answer. So how about I throw you a little bit of a curveball though, because I'm not totally familiar with Jim Knowles' defense. You know, I've tried to read up on it. I've tried to watch some breakdowns of it. And I know he likes to apparently use multiple safeties, as many as three, and just kind of have them rotating, so more players in the secondary. But for an X factor, something that I think will be fascinating to see for Tennessee this season, Stephen, is I think their best position group on defense and perhaps on the entire team might be linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you utilize that? Now, again, he's a veteran. I'm sure he's not, well, I would hope not, but you know, the worst coaches in the world are ones who are like, you got all this talent at one position. They're like, well, we only put two of them on the field. You know what I mean? Like, you adapt to your personnel, or at least you should, particularly in college football, because it turns over all the time. But I'm going to be fascinated to see how Jim Knowles utilizes all these great linebackers, because it'll be a travesty if he rolls out a two linebacker look more often than not when Tennessee goes you know, six deep at linebacker. It'd be nonsensical. But how are they going to do it? I don't know. And again, I'm confident that he'll adapt his system, but I got to see it to believe it.
I'll go defense too. I was also going to spotlight edge rusher because the uncertainty with Chaz Coleman, you know, Tennessee's got some other turnover there. Jordan Norman transferring in from Tulane to Tennessee, a guy like Tyree Weathersby. Somebody's going to have to step up and get to the quarterback. Like maybe they can kick some of these linebackers or use some of these linebackers as rush ends off the edge. But I think you're right. Like, Tennessee's got a lot of interesting pieces. You know, they did well, I think, in the secondary, in the portal. How does this all work? I think the good news is Knowles has a ton of experience from whether it's Oklahoma State, whether it's Duke, whether it's Ohio State. There was always like, it felt like some friction about what he wanted to do at Ohio State relative to maybe some of the assistants. So I think he's got kind of a deep, you know, catalog of things that he could deploy. And so that's kind of the intriguing thing is the linebackers are so good, but there's questions some elsewhere. How does those pieces all fit together? Very interested to see that. And also, like I mentioned, how Tennessee generates a pass rush, given some of those questions at edge rusher right now.
Hey, shout out Cousin Ken. He said, I'm suffering from Billy gaslighting syndrome. So Billy Napier, of course, is what he's talking about. He's a big Florida guy. So how about we do Florida next, Stephen? What was that biggest X factor for the Gators year one, John Summerall era?
How about Harrison Moore, potentially, most likely the starting center, filling in for Jake Slaughter, who was one of the top centers in college football last season? Offensive line was probably one of the biggest question marks exiting spring. We saw John Summerall kind of highlighted that this group's got some developing to do. They're going to have to get really busy from coaching and developing these guys. Harrison Moore had over 700 snaps last year at Georgia Tech. So is not only is he coming over with experience, but also familiarity with this offense. And this offense that Buster Faulkner is bringing from Georgia Tech, a lot of shifts, a lot of motion. But I have a center who's got experience in that and can kind of help, you know, the quarterback's ID and be the quarterback kind of that front, I think is really crucial. So you've got a guy who's already a pretty solid player, and he's got experience in your system, and he's replacing a very good center. I think how Harrison Moore elevates his game in the SEC is kind of one of the X factors for me for Florida. I got a couple guys on defense too, Mike, but would you agree with that selection?
Yeah, it's interesting. Very interesting. And I could be mistaken because, again, I don't watch a lot of Georgia Tech. I mean, why would you? But does Buster Faulkner, does he go under center a lot?
They will. Obviously, they used shotgun too with Haynes King. So,
right. I'm just kind of curious, and maybe I'm overanalyzing here, Stephen, but I'm wondering, you know, new center. I wonder if there's a quarterback that he's more familiar with, or, you know, that could always play a part as well because of, again, no one pays any attention to the snap unless it's gone wrong. Shout out to who was that dude that was at Bama? They hated his ass. Then he went to Ohio State and was like an All-American.
I mean, oh, Seth McLaughlin, right? Yeah.
Like he was the world's worst person because he couldn't snap a football. But every other center in history, we don't know their name because they could snap it without it going over the quarterback's head. So, again, I don't know. But just the familiarity with the quarterback, I wonder how much, if at all, that plays into the competition for the Gators, because I mean it could be something as simple as that determines your starting quarterback.
Yeah, I was trying to look it up in some of the advanced metrics databases that I have to see how many snaps they had, like shotgun under center. Do think Haynes King was primarily from a shotgun last year, trying to run my mind through all the Georgia Tech games that I watched. So yeah, I think that will be something interesting to watch because like short yardage situations, obviously. There's quite a bit of hatred out there for using shotgun at third and one or third and two. So how all of that is kind of meshed together with the familiarity in the offense, the center, the quarterback, like Aaron Filo's got that experience. Like he's got familiarity with Harrison Moore from being at Georgia Tech. It should make for a pretty seamless transition over there to Florida. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons I'm pretty high on this Florida offense is like, it feels like there's a lot of good pieces. And assuming that offensive line takes a step forward, the skill talent's there for Jaden Baugh to thrive. It's there for those receivers. I think Aaron Filo or Tramble Jones, whichever quarterback works out, I think that Florida's going to be okay at quarterback this year.
And so who were these defensive players that you were kind of considering as well?
I wanted to throw out Jaden Woods, Mike. I think he was a guy that Florida fought really hard to keep in Gainesville because he could have went to the portal, probably commanded quite a bit from some other teams. Kind of one of those edge rushers that's just kind of starting to realize some of his potential. Last season, just 3.5 sacks. You know, Florida was kind of mid-pack in the SEC in sacks. I think they need to up that a bit. And I think maybe he fits better in the breakout category. But I think if he emerges, you start to answer some of those questions about line of scrimmage on the Florida defensive side of the ball, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, the way, like you said, that they've worked hard to keep him when it looked like he might get away, I'm sure the Florida staff fully aware the potential value he had. And I don't know how much cut-ups Brad White was looking up of the defenses necessarily. He was probably focused primarily on offenses. Being a defensive coordinator, but I have to imagine he said, I'll take less money if we keep Woods right. here. You know what?
Right. There's a lot of interesting defenders on this Florida defense, isn't there? Like Childs and McCray. Like there's been some guys who are like high profile guys in recruiting that maybe haven't met potential yet, or are just kind of starting to get, you know, kind of get going on their potential. I think Woods certainly fits that. And I think edge rushers and dynamic players off the edge, they're always short supply of the portal, kind of like offensive linemen. So yeah, I think if I was Brad White, I was like, yeah, I'll take some 5,000 less or whatever it is, if that means Jaden Woods is rushing the passer for us this year.
All right. How about where they're not short of money here either, Steven? Of course, College Station, biggest X factor for A&M post-spring under Mike Elko entering year three.
The boring answer is Marcel Reed, right? The more interesting answer is Ray Coney at linebacker. He's a transfer from Tulsa. Here's why I think he's pretty important. First of all, Torian York has gone to the NFL. Damian Sanford got banged up in the spring game. I know A&M's got some guys maybe who could be breakout candidates at linebacker too. But Coney was a first-team American Conference defender last season at Tulsa. 129 tackles. He brings pretty good size to the position too. I think back to that playoff game where Miami had some success popping big-time run plays. And we also saw that last year, like at times, A&M needed to cut down on the big plays allowed in the ground game. Got some turnover at linebacker in the second level. Like, can Coney be somebody who can be a stopper? And not only just be a stopper to maybe eliminate some of those big plays, but you got big shoes to fill with Torian York and whatever happens with Sanford this offseason. So I think there's a pathway on maybe perhaps filling an important weakness, but also filling injury and also personnel turnover. I think he's kind of an under-the-radar transfer this season in the SEC.
Dang, Steven Hidden with the deep cuts on that one. Yeah, no, that's pretty fascinating. I would have thought with your love of offensive line, maybe up there. I mean, because that's going to be critical, particularly left tackle for Marcel Reed. And his struggles late in the year when they couldn't really pass protect, that really exposed him, as it does all quarterbacks. I mean, hell, I mean, it's isn't it funny, Stephen, where like Texas fans are like, Marcel Reed, he can't play because we were all over him in Miami, which had two elite rushers, were all over him. And then if you see Arch Manning against Texas, they're like, we just didn't have time. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, it's the same thing for all these guys. You could be freaking Tom Brady back there. If you're not getting protection, you're not going to be able to do your job. But that kind of is why it's so critical that A&M hits the offensive line. But, yeah, I mean, I can't disagree because I think A&M, like you said, you know, all of a sudden, linebacker is a huge question mark for the Aggies.
Offensive line is a good call, too. You know, I mentioned it, Mike, but Marcel Reed's a boring answer just because of his play at the end of the last season. But I think regardless of his play doesn't matter if you can't protect and you can't run the ball and if he has no time to throw. We mentioned that throughout the offseason, one of the biggest questions is the turnover at offensive coordinator. You're losing a very good offensive coordinator in Colin Klein, Holman Wiggins coming in. So, yeah, there's a lot of questions there. But, you know, this offensive line, I think the one thing that gives me a little bit of optimism about the offensive line is like it's almost like two different paths. Like, you've got all these guys coming in with SEC experience who've been through this conference and they're stepping in, but there's also like a wave of like younger players who are kind of like pushing them for time. So in some ways, if some of those guys get beat out, you feel pretty good if you're Texas A&M. Losing four starters and losing the caliber of some of those that you'd lost, it is a big question. But I'm looking at this going, man, Texas A&M, the margins are going to matter here, because I like this roster. I think it's deep. It's really talented, but they've got to stop the run better. And you lose a linebacker who's going to start for an indefinite period of time. That's kind of why I went with Coney instead of one of the offensive linemen. And of course, Marcel Reed was just too obvious too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, how about first year for Will Stein on the bluegrass, Steven? Who do you got as that biggest X factor for Kentucky?
Mike, we've heard all offseason about Kenny Minchie, and there is no doubt about it that he's one of the top, transfer quarterbacks this season. But I think if we look in the backfield behind Kenny Minchie, I think there's some questions here. CJ Baxter and Javonte Barnes, those are my two X factors for this Kentucky team, because I do think you want some balance. If you're Will Stein, you got some guys at receiver. It's Shane Carr from Southern Utah. Kenny Darby, the freshman, looked pretty good this spring. DJ Miller's back. You've got some talented, maybe albeit unproven playmakers at receiver, but these running backs, they've been banged up. Can they stay healthy? If they don't work out, Jason Patterson has played some the last 2 years, but it's pretty thin. I think Kentucky's backfield is probably one of the backfields with the most questions coming into the spring in the SEC. They have talent, but there's a lot of questions based upon the injury history. So just thinking, you don't want to put too much pressure on Kenny Minchie. You want to have some good balance. Will Stein did this at Oregon. They rotated in a couple running backs. Kentucky needs to develop a ground game. Can these guys be the answer?
Mm-hmm. Hey, real quick, shout out Cousin Phillip. Good evening, fellas. My favorite show on my birthday. The only gift I need or received. Hope everyone had a good day. Shout out, Philip. Happy birthday, buddy. Hope you had a great day.
Happy birthday, Philip.
But Kenny Minchie. Steven. Taking the easy way out again. But, I was reading an article the other day about how great Will Stein is, and God, man, they're eating up everything that guy's got going right now. Of course, I believe he's killing it on the recruiting trail, so that's great. And I'm not rooting against Kentucky. I want them to be more productive. I called for the end of Mark Stoops. Thankfully, they listened. They pulled the plug. We got some new blood in there. But there's two different ways to look at it, Stephen, where – now, you would know better than I, because, again, you're the encyclopedia. You're the college football encyclopedia. What was the only quarterback I don't even know who he is, really? The UTSA guy that he coached. Do you know who that is?
You talking about Frank Harris back at UTSA?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
So Frank Harris was solid, right? Mm-hmm. And then at, what, Oregon? I don't even recall if he worked with Bo Nix or not, but Bo Nix, and then Dylan Gabriel. And then the most recent guy, of course. So, people are like, well, every quarterback this guy touches turns to gold. Well, aren't those were like elite prospects, five-star right. Elite players surrounded by talent? You know what I mean? So we got to pump the brakes with, he's done that time and time again. Minchie will just be the next elite star that Will Stein gets to coach up. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this guy is a guru of all gurus, but I don't think that's necessarily going to translate overnight to Kentucky. Is it fair or not?
I think that's fair. I think if you wanted to sell somebody on Will Stein, I think I would show him the Bo Nix tape of Auburn and show him the Bo Nix tape of Oregon, because that's the one that stands out the most. Because, let's be honest, Dylan Gabriel was pretty proven already when he transferred up to Oregon. And, of course, last year, Dante Moore, he struggled at UCLA, but there was some pretty challenging circumstances. So not trying to knock like Will Stein at all. I think if I was wanting to use a case study for what he could do, it would be like the Bo Nix season. So I think kind of what that might mean for this year. And I think Kenny Minchie is kind of not only is he a breakout, he's a top transfer. Like, he's still a bit of a wild card. I mean, he's been the backup to CJ Carr, and sort of what we're kind of hanging our hat on if we're looking for optimism at Kentucky is, oh, he pushed CJ Carr. And who knows? Like, I mean, coaches say that all the time. Like, the guys are pushing each other. Like, that could be just to keep him out of the portal. So I do think there has to be a little bit of, like, excitement if you're Kentucky about his track record. But I think there's also got to be, like, whoa, like, this is going 200 miles an hour. This is probably going to be a little bit of a greater rebuilding project. This isn't going to be Kirk Cignetti in Indiana going to the playoff. It feels like the climb is going to be a lot steeper. And also, Mike, go back to Indiana's first season. That schedule was pretty favorable. It was one of the biggest storylines in the play. This is the 9-game SEC slate, right? It's not going to be easy to make that jump from outside the playoff all the way into it if you're Kentucky. I'm pretty high in the Will Stein hire, but I think maybe a little bit of, like, let's slow the brakes here in this one on year one success for this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of that, I don't know. It's so weird. But I did hear this on a podcast recently, Stephen, where, again, I don't pay attention to Indiana. Good for them. I'm not trying to take away from anything they've accomplished. It's, quite frankly, it's amazing and it's historic. That's great. But the first year, I think they had not beaten a ranked team, or they beat one, I think, that was ranked number 25 entering the playoff. I think they had one ranked win, and that was Cignetti was on, like, game day or something. It was like, we beat the shit out of ranked teams. And it was like, they were 25th and you beat them. And I don't think they were ranked ever again. You know what I mean? Like, shut up, you idiot. But yeah. Again, so that's my rant on that. But to your point, they didn't play a damn soul, and they won't this year either. Probably
their schedule, Indiana and Notre Dame in the Big Two conferences, forgetting about the Big 12 and ACC for a second, Indiana and Notre Dame, I think, have two of the most favorable paths to the playoff this year, right? Which I know warms your heart to hear, right?
I can't wait for them to get their ass toasted in the playoff, because it's coming.
Just wait, Mike. There are going to be people who pick Notre Dame number one this offseason.
Oh, I've already seen it. All right, shout out Mississippi State, Stephen. What's the biggest X factor for the Bulldogs from Stark?
Let's go to the trenches, because protecting Kamario Taylor, clearing rushing lanes for Fluff Bothwell, priority number one for Jeff Lebby. Miles McVay, Jakeem Shumpert-Perkins, and Blake Steen. That's three players who are probably fighting for two spots at the tackle spots. Jeff Lebby did seem to kind of indicate that Shumpert-Perkins, he was a JUCO kid last year, basically took a redshirt season in his first year at Mississippi State. It looks like he's got one of the tackle spots solidified. Whether it's left or right seems to be up in the air. The reason why I bring all this up, Mike, is Miles McVay has less than 300 career snaps. Blake Steen was hurt last year, and Shumpert-Perkins was a JUCO kid who redshirted. There's not a lot of SEC experience on the resume, and for a position group that has questions, those guys are really unproven. Obviously, there could be a lot of upside, but there's a ton of questions there. So seeing how the tackle spots solidify is my biggest question for Mississippi State right now.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, and I mean, I get it. It's, if I recall, it's been a little bit of a revolving door up there at Mississippi State on the offensive line. Now, I've seemingly, you know, got it to work for the most part. You know, not to say they're one of the best offensive lines, but far from the worst either. So, you know, I'm confident in Jeff Lebby and company to get that thing going, but you're absolutely right, man. You got a promising quarterback. You've got to do everything you can to protect him, because he's could be, I don't want to call him a savior. It's way too early for that, but he could be the turning point for this Mississippi State program.
Yeah, it feels like if you solve the offensive line, it only raises the ceiling for where this could go this year. Because I think even though Brennan Thompson's is in the NFL, they're going to miss that speed. I think they're going to find guys at receiver. Like, I'm not worried about Mississippi State's receivers. Fluff Bothwell's back. He's going to be one of the SEC's better running backs. But Taylor is going to take some wear and tear because of the kind of the style of play that he has. keeping him healthy as much as you can, keeping him upright only raises the ceiling. So it did sound like Levy was somewhat optimistic about the offensive line at the end of spring. I do always take those things with a grain of salt because I've seen coaches like rave about depth at a position. And then week three, they're saying, well, our defensive line isn't any good. We got to find some guys to step up. So I take it with a grain of salt, but I just think like Cannon Boone at center, he's one answer, but they felt like they entered this spring with a lot of question marks and a lot of moving pieces this way around the center spot. So if Shumpert Perkins, if McVay, if Steen, if they claim those two tackle spots, whichever two of those three do, then Mississippi State will be in much better shape as they go into the season.
Mm-hmm. Hey, shout out Cousin Jared. He gifted a membership, as did our great friend Cousin Glenn Warsaw. We appreciate you guys. Cousin Jared, he gifted United States Marine Corps. Thank you for your service. And Glenn gifted Cam. Cam in United States Marine Corps. Welcome to
the family.
Yeah. So for Cousin Jared, Steven, let's do LSU and their foul-mouthed coach here. Biggest X factor for the Lane train.
Mike, I hate to do this, but we got to do it, right? It's the foot of Sam Levitt, the most important foot perhaps in all of college football, just because he is one of the top transfer quarterbacks this season. Obviously, Brendan Sorsby's status is unsettled at Texas Tech. Darian Mensah at Miami would be my top transfer quarterback. But Sam Levitt's not far behind that. So he's super important to this LSU season. They went out and spent the money. He's the guy to run this offense. He's got to be healthy. He's got to be healthy and also deliver on the potential that we saw at times at Arizona State, especially at the end of that 2024 season where Arizona State won the Big 12 title. He's really the key to the season for me for LSU, because I do have confidence that they're going to find the right pieces at receiver. I think they'll be more productive on the ground game. Obviously, Blake Baker's done a great job on defense. Yes, there are some questions there, but to me, this all revolves around Sam Levitt. So, Mike, I'm sorry to go with a boring answer, but I got to do it here.
I love this from State fans are like, I had nothing against this, but what about the year before? Oh yeah. Well, let's not look at that. Let's not look when he kicked our ass, just the year we beat him. But yeah. Is it fair to say, shout out Cousin Kenny says the $5 million foot. Oh man. Yeah. I mean, it's quite the game. Maybe that's Kiffin's strategy. You know, to deflect all the attention on me, not the quarterback, not the offensive line. I mean, this could that be part of his strategy?
Lane Kiffin, master genius, manipulating the media. Maybe. I mean, he was kind of downplaying things a few weeks ago, which kind of caught my attention. But then again, you know, it's Lane Kiffin. It's hard to, with all coaches, it's hard to read into too much of kind of what they're saying. But also, Mike, I do think at the most basic level, I think Lane Kiffin's got to know, right? Like, he's not being brought in just to go 8-4 this year. Now, if they go 8-4 and they make the playoff next year, it'll be a noisy kind of offseason, but it'll all be forgotten. I'm sure LSU is going to be fine under Kiffin, but I think given the pressure, given the expectations, it's Sam Levitt's health and his play this year is going to be under the microscope, because if he gets hurt, Mike, I mentioned this last week, I've had a series of foot injuries and they get aggravated very easily. Now, I don't have access to the world-class training that LSU has, but I think about that often, like with quarterbacks and especially ones that are mobile, the chance of like injuring it again. So his health, his play, it all adds up to his importance to 2026. And so that's why he's the biggest X factor for me. If you don't want to go Sam Levitt, you want to go maybe somewhere else. Like, I think you have to go somewhere along this offensive line, or maybe even it's like Barry or Durham, one of the two running backs, as Kiffin tries to get that ground game jump started there.
Mm-hmm. Right, because obviously he wanted Kevin Lacy.
Yeah.
They had a deal worked out for him. That was well documented, but even though he never entered the portal, interesting. Wonder if Vanity Fair wrote about that. All right, Steven, last team here, Vanderbilt. Who would be that X factor for the Commodores?
I think I got a good one for you, Mike. Let's see how well you grade me on this one after the obvious pick of Sam Levitt. Javonte Connor, a tight end transfer from East Carolina. He is about 6'4", 239 pounds. Some of the Vanderbilt rosters of Eli Stowers, 6'4", about 235 pounds. I'm not saying they're the same player, but if you look at the way Connor was used at East Carolina, he lined up in the slot. He lined up in line. He did kind of both things that you want to see kind of as a pass catcher at tight end. So he's got that versatility that Stowers did, being able to go outside and kind of be a bigger wide receiver. You got to help your young quarterback with playmakers. And Junior Sherrill's back, said Alexander. Vanderbilt's got a good core, but I think they need more. And so Connor transferring in from East Carolina, if he can be a difference maker, help replace some of that production that Eli Stowers had, that will go a long way to easing some of the kind of young quarterback growth concerns that Jarrett Curtis has coming into this year.
All right, Stephen, you've totally redeemed yourself. That's an A+. I'm giving you a grade for that. Not making the easy choice here with the quarterback position for Vanderbilt. I think you nailed it out of the park. So we do appreciate all the hard work you did getting ready for this show. And I wanted to highlight this just for you, Stephen. Shout out Cousin Nathan. Any updates you can provide on the Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine?
Absolutely. I appreciate you asking. So it looks like May 22nd is the official on sale date. I would also be checking, and I'll try to drop a note on the show. It should hit our online store a little bit earlier than that. The 22nd is the official on sale date, give or take a few days. I've had trouble finding magazines on the newsstand now, especially with how limited they are. So 22nd, I would start checking around that day.
Yeah, and remember, we're going to try to get some official cousins signed copies via Stephen Lassen. So, you know, that'll be right around the corner as well. But reach out to us, thatsecpodcast@gmail.com, if you're interested in that. I'd like to get as many of those out as we possibly can. And we may have one more here. Shout out, Cousin Chase Moore, member for 16 months. M-I-Z, Hardy, gonna be fun. I certainly hope that is the case. All right, buddy. Anything else before we hop off here?
Mike, I know I said this earlier, but shout out to all the cousins for showing up tonight and asking great questions as always. It was good to be deep diving on the SEC as we sit here in the early part of May. We still got a couple of months to go for the season, but always excited to deep dive, Mike. You can't wait. We got a lot of stuff planned the next couple of weeks, so excited to see where the offseason takes us.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back tomorrow with Cousin Shane, and hopefully Marler says he'll come in the afternoon. So if you want to come in and troll him, go ahead. Same time as always, 3 Eastern, 2 Central, and then Cousin Shane, same time as always, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. But until then, we will catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.